This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Is more skilled migration the key to solving a chronic worker shortage? Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. We'll take you to Australia in a moment, where all options are on the table to address problems in the labor market. But first to Sri Lanka, which will receive $1.2 billion to prevent an all-out economic collapse. The International Monetary Fund approved the loan this morning after a week of talks with government officials. The BBC's Yogita Lamai has more.
There are a number of requirements to be fulfilled before the money is actually given, including agreements from nations like China and India that Sri Lanka owes debts to. But this announcement could be the first step towards recovery for the island nation, which is suffering from acute shortages of food, fuel, and other basic supplies. Mass protests forced President Gotabaya Rajapaksa to flee the country in July. The unrest has abated under Sri Lanka's new leadership, but could gather momentum again unless conditions improve.
That's Yogita Lamai reporting there. Checking the numbers, Sri Lanka's benchmark stock index rose 2% today, its third straight day of gains on news of that IMF loan approval. That positive momentum, though, is not keeping up in other global markets. European stocks are following Asia solidly lower. They're down in the 1 to 1.5% range at this hour. That's after new COVID lockdown requirements were outlined in Chengdu, one of China's biggest cities. Meanwhile, in Australia, unemployment is at a near 50-year low of 3.4%. But there's a problem. There are now too many jobs and not enough workers to fill them. So the government is holding a two-day summit this week in Canberra with business groups and trade unions to figure out how to address chronic shortages. The BBC's Phil Mercer explains the source of the labour market woes there.
There are many reasons why Australia has an ageing population. Also, the absence of workers from overseas, many who left the country during COVID haven't come back. There are very significant deficiencies in the way that Australians, especially younger people, are trained for various jobs. There is an idea that Australia's migrant intake should be increased by, say, 40,000 people to help address those labour shortages. And the immigration minister here is a man called Andrew Giles, and he says that Australia needs to do more to attract workers from overseas.
We are in a global contest for talent, and highly skilled migrants will be looking around. And one of the things they'll be looking at is what happened during the pandemic. And they will have seen the former government tell people to go home, and for those who didn't return to their original home, denied them the sort of income support and other supports that other countries did. And we've got to communicate that we won't be doing something similar in the future.
So, Phil, increasing the number of skilled workers is one option. There's also discussion about welcoming more refugees into Australia. Would there be enough support in place from the government to allow those workers to quickly enter the workforce once they arrive?
Well, campaign groups certainly believe that refugees are an untapped resource. In the last week or so, there was a new resettlement program launched that is encouraging refugees to settle quickly and to help them find work. And research from the Refugee Council of Australia has shown that refugees generally have a greater willingness to start their own businesses than other migrants, and they often have high levels of risk-taking and entrepreneurialism when it comes to business. There are obstacles. Language skills can often be a problem. Qualifications and work experience gathered overseas are often not recognised by Australian employers, so that is an issue. But generally, refugees coming to Australia are relatively young and extremely eager to work.
Now, Phil, when it comes to this two-day meeting that the government is holding with businesses, business leaders, campaign groups, is the cost of living problem being discussed at all? Because inflation in Australia is as much of a problem as it is in the rest of the world, nearing a three-decade high, and wage growth certainly isn't keeping up with that inflation. So are there any solutions to that problem?
One of the big topics of this two-day summit in Canberra, it involves government officials, representatives from business trade unions, and also community organisations. The cost of living, and especially wages, sluggish wage growth in this country, is a big, big problem. Now, if you look at Australia's official unemployment rate, it stands at 3.4%, which is slightly lower, for example, than the United States. And general economic theory would suggest that if unemployment is pretty low, then workers should have the ability to bargain and receive higher wages. But that has not been the case. So many delegates, especially from the trade union movement, are urging the recently elected Labour government to do more to raise wages and also to boost the workforce as well. Many sectors of the economy have a very simple problem, that they have too many jobs and not enough workers.
The BBC's Phil Mercer for us in Sydney. Thanks for breaking this down.
Thanks, Victoria.
This week, one of the first grain ships allowed to depart the southern Ukrainian port of Odessa arrived in East Africa. It carried much-needed wheat supplies for countries including Ethiopia, which the UN says has a population at risk of starvation. The war in Ukraine is one problem, but many fear renewed fighting in the northern part of Ethiopia will worsen a dire humanitarian crisis. The BBC's Kalkadan Yabidal explains the early effects of losing out of a lucrative U.S. trade deal because of that unrest.
This is one of the dozens of garment factories in the outskirts of Hawassa, a city in southern Ethiopia aiming to be an industrial hub. Hundreds of factory workers, most of them young women, sew denim trousers which will be sold abroad. Up to 85% of the factory's products used to be exported to the United States under the African Growth and Trade Act, or AGOA, which allows sub-Saharan African countries duty-free access to the U.S. market. That was until January, when in response to allegations of human rights abuses amid a raging civil war, Washington removed Ethiopia from the program. And for people like Raghu Patar, the CEO of the company who owns this factory, a new reality emerged. No longer enjoying tax-free privileges, factories now have to sell their products for higher prices.
Now they're reducing the quantity day by day. Maybe after 2-3 months, we don't have anything to export to US. September, October, November, we don't have any orders from the US. Because US is a big market and big volume. That's what we got immediate effect.
The garment factories in the city's industrial zone employed a total of 30,000 people by last year, with plans to expand 10,000 more this year. Now all expansion plans have been halted and some factories are downsizing. And worse, 4,000 workers have been laid off in the first half of this year alone, and more layoffs are expected in the coming months. One of those who lost their jobs is Balainish, a 26-year-old mother of two.
Life has become very difficult. Everything is expensive now, even soaps and oil. Since prices have gone up, it's hard to be without a job.
The war has already weakened the country's economy. The government called the US decision regrettable at the time. Efforts have now increased to get Addis Ababa reinstated in the program. For that to happen, among other things, authorities must allow in international investigators. But with the recent resumption of fighting in northern Ethiopia, this prospect appears to be far. In the meantime, many are already paying a heavy price.
That's the BBC's Kalkadan Yabidal reporting from Hawassa in southern Ethiopia there. And in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.